My guest has lived in Ashland for more than two decades. She was first elected to the Ashland City Council in 2018. In 2023, she became mayor. I'm excited to welcome into the studio Ashland Mayor Tanya Graham. Welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here.
And we welcome your questions for the mayor. You can email jx@jeffnet.org. So, Mayor, let's start with your background. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a very small, unincorporated town in northern Nevada. It's called Wadsworth, and it's the very southernmost section of the Pyramid Lake Paiute Indian Reservation.
Okay. So you grew up on an Indian reservation?
I did. My family's not native, but there were inholdings within the town and within the reservation. So it was kind of a mix of a couple of different cultures there.
Nice. Okay, so what brought you to Oregon?
My sister brought me to Oregon. She had moved to Ashland. She's about 10 years older than I am, and she had come to Ashland. So while I was in college, I was coming back to visit her here. And when I got done, I knew I was coming back west. So Ashland became my home at that point.
So you fell in love?
I did. I did. Like many people, I think lots of us are here because we fell in love with Ashland.
It's a beautiful place.
It is.
So what caused you to run for office?
Well, my regular profession is that I'm a climate change adaptation specialist. And so I help communities understand changing conditions and what that's likely to look like, and then help them think through what's important for them to protect and what's their vision for the future. And what I saw was a perfectly reasonable community and perfectly reasonable government. But I thought that municipal government was being called to do more than it was doing, more than it had traditionally done. And I wanted to be part of helping the municipal government figure out its new role in this changing world. I wanted to see it take a more active role in not only climate change, but in things like providing affordable housing, spurring the economy in a way that could be sustained, that sort of thing.
And for those who aren't aware, what kind of governance does Ashland have?
So we have a council manager government process. Mm-hmm. So that means that the city council as a council hires the city manager. The city manager is the CEO of the city. In some places that have what's called a strong mayor structure, the mayor can make any decision they want. They're essentially the CEO. They can hire and fire people. Mm-hmm. In our circumstance, and in most communities now, all of that authority sits with the city manager, and the city council simply selects the manager.
And our city manager is?
Sabrina Cotta.
Okay. So there's a lot going on. I have a lot of questions for you. But aside from the federal policies that have impacted the state, Governor Tina Kotek last week declared a statewide emergency due to the threat of wildfire. Ashland also arrested an active shooter last week, and bus service in Ashland is being cut back. And Ashland and Phoenix High Schools this week are welcoming Japanese All-Stars to town for the Pacific Rim Bowl. That's just a short list. What's top of mind for you?
Right now, it's wildfire risk. We just had the end of our Better Together wildfire preparedness series happened just a couple of days ago. And it was focused on evacuations because that's where we're at in the season. The earlier in the spring, we were focused much more on how do you get your home ready, your property ready, how can you reduce ignition sources, that sort of thing, reduce wildfire risk. And now because we're in the middle of wildfire season and we've already had several fires right around us. The focus is on how do you prepare for evacuation and how do you really think through what it would mean to evacuate, especially if you're evacuating in a hurry. And so that has been a big part of the focus. But, you know, when we get into wildfire season, because we are at such high risk, it really does overtake my thinking in terms of my role in the city. What is it that we are doing at the staff level, but also at the council level, to encourage people to make sure that they know what they need to be doing?
When it comes to natural disasters, how would you describe Ashland's readiness and resilience?
That's a big question, because wildfire risk has increased exponentially in the last 10 to 15 years. I don't think any city in the western U.S. is ready for the risk that we are facing already. And we know that that's continuing to increase. And so I think Ashland has done a number of really important things, especially since the Alameda fire. So we have our own emergency manager now, which we didn't have that position before. We also have a communications officer who will be the communications person in the event of an emergency. We didn't have that before. We have an emergency operations center with Southern Oregon University and the Ashland School District. Again, that collaboration hadn't happened before. So the coordination with the county, with other communities, with the state, all of that has been improved dramatically since the Alameda fire. We now have an exit onto the interstate if we need it. We've been doing a lot of evacuation planning and training and helping the community understand. And we are still a Western community built up the side of a forested mountain. And there are realities to that that make it very difficult to say, and may make it difficult to ever say, that we are fully ready. Your other question, though, was about resilience, and that is coming back from it. And I think it really depends on the size of the disaster. Every, you know, if a community experiences a disaster that really levels it in some way, that's a very difficult process to come back from. And so that's what I tell people when we talk about wildfire. People tend to think, well, there's no point in trying because if a wildfire comes, all is lost. But that's not actually true. There's a lot of situations where it's able to be contained to some part of the community. And then if we can do that, then our ability to be resilient behind it is much better. But resilience is really much more, it's not only the physical infrastructure, but it's also how do people see their role in the community. And I think that's one of the places where Ashland is particularly strong. Mm-hmm. We have a very strong community spirit and a commitment to this beautiful place that we're all lucky enough to live in. And that is key when a community is trying to come out of a disaster.
Any lessons learned from Talon and Phoenix and their resilience capabilities?
You know, I think primarily just watching the example of them working together and what social structures came out of that recovery process. They're still recovering, and they're going to be recovering for a while still yet. Right. It's an ongoing process, but watching people come together to help each other, to figure these sorts of things out in the recovery space is really inspiring. That's what I would say from watching Talent in Phoenix, is that they have done, I think, a beautiful job of holding their community while moving through the recovery process.
In case you're just joining us, my guest is Ashland Mayor Tanya Graham. You can join the conversation via email at jx@jeffnet.org. So, Mayor, during the July 4th Independence Day celebration, you gave a speech that included your concerns about the federal dismantling of democratic systems and institutions. How might Ashland be affected by the federal government?
I think it's often easy to underestimate the impact that the federal government has on a community. We tend to see the immediate decisions of our local council or county commissioners, sometimes our state governments. But the basic structure of our democracy needs to hold at the federal level in order for us to be able to have the community that we want to have at the ground level. And that means being able to be confident that we have the rights that are afforded to us by the Constitution, and that the federal government is not going to be usurping those rights or overstepping their authority. The different levels of government we have rely on these different levels staying in their lane. And if we are not seeing that, if we're seeing any of the levels at the state level or the federal level, if we see that structure is not holding in terms of the separation of powers and the checks and balances, then we have to understand that at some point that will land at our feet at the local government level. And we're able to do what we can as the city of Ashland because our space has been, you know, left alone, if you will. You know, the space of local government has not been impinged on by either the state or the federal space up to this point. And I think that that's what a big part of what we need to look at. It is important to remember that the federal government has physical resources in terms of the military and in terms of different law enforcement agencies that is very different from local government. And we have limits in terms of what we are allowed to do in relation to those. And so we have to be aware and willing to protect the holding of that space.
Okay, so you act locally, but you think globally. And recently you traveled to Ukraine.
Yes, I did.
Tell me about that.
Well, so the city of Ashland has a relationship, a sister city relationship with Sviatohirsk, Ukraine. And Sviatohirsk is in the oblast, in an oblast that's right where the Russians are. So the Russians are about 50 kilometers away from Sviatohirsk. And the Russians had actually come in and taken over Sviatohirsk for about four months, and then they were pushed back out. So our sister city is right up where a lot of the action is in terms of the Ukraine-Russia situation. And so because of that relationship, I received an invitation to the Cities and Regions Summit, the third annual one that they've had in Kyiv. And that was in early June. And so I talked with our city council chair and our city manager about whether I should go and what that would mean, and got support from both of them. And so I did. I went to Kyiv, participated in that day's summit, and then spent the second day touring around Kyiv with the mayor of Sviatohirsk. And he was explaining to me the whole process of the people rising up and working towards a more free country and a more liberated country.
What did you learn?
Wow. There's not enough time on this station, on this particular show. But I think a couple of things. For me personally, I've always known that air raid sirens are a thing of war. You know, we've had warning systems for a long time, but it is something to know that they exist. It is something entirely different to experience one.
Yeah.
And both nights that I was in Ukraine, we had those in the middle of the night. And so that awareness of the physical awareness of what it is to be under attack, where you're only getting this signal because there's an incoming missile that has been detected. And that gave me a whole different appreciation for what it's like to live in a place that is under siege like that, and to just try to maintain a life. I have my own children, and I see families, you know, they're raising children in this atmosphere, and this, it's been years. And so watching people be resilient, you know, we were talking about that resilience, watching people be so unified in their response to this aggression, and also trying to maintain some kind of normalcy, was really inspiring to me. I saw that.
Within an environment of constant trauma.
Of constant trauma. And I think one of the things that was particularly poignant for me is the Mayor Rybalkin took me to Maidan Square, which is where the early pro-democracy demonstrations were happening in 2014. And then he talked me through all of the different histories that kind of led us up to this point. But in Maidan Square, they have a whole section of that area that is memorials. So it's flags for all of the people who've been lost from Kyiv. And towns all across Ukraine have similar squares in their town centers. And all of the flags represent a single person, and there's photos of different people. And the realization that everybody in this country knows someone and probably loves someone who has died in defense of the country. And what that is, that is, it's a constant trauma, because you also don't know who is next.
Right.
Right? And many people have lost multiple people that they love.
Okay. We're going to have to take a short break on that. Now, before the break, we were talking about your travel to Ukraine. And I was just curious about whether or not there was any relationship with the State Department in your travel.
There wasn't. I was connected with the people from Ukraine who were handling all of the delegates. So we had people coming in from all around Europe. There were some other American mayors and folks who were there. But they handled all of those logistics. So my job was to get to the Polish border, to a train station at the Polish border. And then they gathered us all up there and took us in by train and then took us all the way back out to Poland. So I knew that once I got to the Polish border that the Ukrainian officials were managing the other side of that. And so I hadn't checked in with the State Department. There's a standard warning not to travel to Ukraine. As it is with all war zones.
And they took good care of you while you were there.
They took great care of me. They did. And what I also noticed in Kyiv, we saw all of the bombing photos, but they've cleaned it up. You can't tell that you're in a city that has been attacked like that. That was really the amazing part to me, is just that they are carrying on the way that they do.
And you brought with you a gift.
I did. So Mayor Rybalkin and I, we've exchanged gifts through people who've traveled between us over the last year and a half. So when I came, I brought him gifts from Ashland. And he gave me a Ukrainian doll that is the specific doll for their oblast or their state. And it's a protector doll. And what he told me was that this was for my community, for Ashland, because they have had wildfires and that sort of thing too. And so he knew that we have things that we need protection from. So he gave that to me, and I'll be putting it in the city hall later on.
Okay, and we'll put a picture of it on our website at jeffexchange.org. Now, you welcomed the mayor of Guanajuato to Ashland to celebrate more than a half century of sisterhood between the two cities. Did she express her feelings to you about the mistreatment of Mexican immigrants here?
She did not. We didn't talk about that so much as we built on that 55 years. We have the longest running sister city relationship in the country. And it has come about because we have exchanges all through our community. It's not even primarily the municipalities. It is our amigo clubs, our rotaries, our universities, our chambers. There has been such a deep level of exchange between the two cities for so long that we just focus primarily on continuing to strengthen that. And we re-upped, if you will. We did signing ceremonies in both cities, and I received a key to their city when I was there, that is really about just cementing in and maintaining that commitment and saying we're still in, and we are still going to do the same things we've always done. And when you're a good sister, you show up when you're needed. It's not just for the parties.
So we've talked about your global concerns and relationships. Let's take this down to the local level. What are some of the big issues that you're dealing with here in Ashland?
There are a lot of them. We already talked about wildfire, so we have the existential reality of our wildfire threat. But we also have economic realities, and we see that in our housing circumstances. We have a lot of people who live who work in Ashland but can't afford to live here. Our businesses tell us that they have trouble getting people to work for them, especially service workers, because they have to commute in from other communities. So one of the things that we did just at our last council meeting is we awarded the first land banking project to the new community land trust that has formed in Ashland. And both of those efforts have been underway for a number of years to get to the point where we could start to receive land bank lands through our land bank and then work with nonprofit developers to develop not only affordable housing but also workforce housing. So how do we get that structure to work better, that system of housing to work better so that we can have the diversity of people living in Ashland that we really want in this community. So housing is a big part of it. You know, we're keeping an eye on the just the economic shocks that are coming from the decisions that are being made at the federal level. Mm-hmm. So with people, with federal workers being laid off and programs being dismantled and just the tariffs and all of that, what we don't know what impact that has on Ashland, but we're very aware that as a tourist destination and as a college town, economic issues ripple through us in a very particular way. And right. So the city is working to be a good partner, to make sure that we are doing whatever is appropriate for the city to do to help strengthen our local businesses.
Well, let's go back to this housing affordability challenge. Tell me why a land bank is necessary for ongoing housing affordability. And by the way, what does that mean? What does affordability mean in Ashland?
Well, let's start with the affordability question. Okay. So when people talk about affordable housing, usually what I call it is big A affordability. It's the formal affordability that we talk about with federal and state programs, very specific for in terms of median income and all of that. There is accessible housing, which is that next level up, which is the teachers and the you know, nurses, firefighters, not police officers, that's those sorts of folks, to be able to afford to live in your community. And that's more of workforce or accessible housing. And then service workers are kind of all through there, depending on what their wages are. What we have is a situation where the market will only provide a certain amount of the housing that we need. At a certain income level, the market doesn't do it. And a big part of that is the cost of land. So if you can take the cost of land out of that equation, you can start to do things both for rentals and for purchase that that increase the stock in the community. So the city of Ashland, we completed our housing production strategy. We were the first ones in the state to get it done. And in that strategy, we've identified it working with a local land trust as an affordable housing developer and also land banking. And the land banking piece is really important because we have regulations that say that if you're annexing property in to build housing, you have to make 25% of it affordable. But it's very difficult for developers to make affordable housing. They don't qualify for the grants that are available to make affordable housing. So often what they want to do is to give it to someone, to an affordable housing developer. Those developers are not always ready to take that land. They're not always lined up at the timing that the developer needs. So in those circumstances, the city can be they can hold the land. We bank it, if you will.
So you're an intermediary.
We're an intermediary, and then we put out an RFP. We're looking for the affordable housing developer, and that's what happened in this case. We had our very first contribution to the bank, and then we moved it through the request for proposals process and then awarded it. So that's a really powerful way of making permanent affordable housing, which is our goal.
In dollars and cents, what does that mean to someone?
It means that if they are, depending on what the structures are and the amount of median income that they have to have, they would qualify for these houses. So in this particular project, these will be purchase housing. So it would make the purchase cost significantly less, in the $250,000 type range. And that allows people who wouldn't be able to afford a house otherwise in Ashland to be able to get into home ownership.
Is that actual ownership or is that?
Yes. So they own the house, mm-hmm. and the land trust owns the property underneath it.
Got it.
So that's how they separate out the land cost from the housing cost. And then if the person who purchases these homes, when they go to sell it, they have to sell it to somebody in that same income level so that it stays permanently affordable.
My guest is Ashland Mayor Tanya Graham, and we're talking about some of the local issues here, one of which is water. Mm-hmm. Tell me what's going on with water.
Well, we had a good snow year, and so that's always a happy thing to have. What our trajectory always is that we fill up our dam, late May, early June, and then over the summer, we draw it down as we use water over the summer. And then depending on the supply and how fast that draws down, in the fall, we can work with our Tatlin, Ashland, Phoenix intertie. So we can tie into Medford Water if we need to towards the end of the summer. But at this point, we're looking pretty good for the year, for the summer. And people can go online and see in real time what the level of water is in our reservoir, how it's been trending, what that looks like going forward. But this year, we are in pretty good shape in terms of water.
Okay, and the water treatment.
Yes.
There was some challenge of getting funding for the water treatment plant.
Yes. So we have full funding through the WIFIA program at the EPA. So that's a loan program, a low-interest loan program. So if we have to, we can fund the entire thing with the WIFIA program. Mm-hmm. But our goal has always been to offset as much of that as we can with grants. We had a FEMA grant lined up for their BRIC program, but then they dismantled the BRIC program. So we have restructured it and moved it to another program that is still in existence. So we are still actively working to get grants to offset that loan amount. But we have started the process of building the water treatment facility.
Are federal dollars in there somewhere?
Not yet, other than the loan. The loan is an EPA program, so it's a federal loan.
Okay, well... speaking of the federal government, the Department of Education seems to be going away. How's that going to affect education here?
You know, I think that's a question for our superintendent, Joseph Hattrick. But what I think is important for us at the community level is to understand that these changes at the federal government level are hitting various different aspects of our community. So at the same time that the education system is dealing with the going away potentially of the Department of Education, the city's dealing with FEMA, radical shifts in FEMA, and maybe FEMA goes away, which affects our emergency management abilities dramatically. And that's one of the things we would have to look at. At the same time, there are changes that are affecting the university. There's changes that are affecting entities like NPR and
For sure,
right? So we need to be aware that those changes are happening across the board. Our hospital is going to be impacted by Medicare changes. So we need to be thinking about this holistically, because there are impacts happening all across the community and they're connected, and our ability to respond in an effective way requires us to be good partners, to be connected in with these other entities as we're all taking shocks, I would say, is what the best way I would describe it.
Okay. Well, we have a couple of minutes left, and I want to get to your blog mentions a formal strategic planning process this year.
Yes.
And so in this holistic manner, envisioning the future for Ashland, possibly without a federal government partnership. What's going on with the strategic planning?
So we are going to be getting started with that later in the summer. We just got done with our budget process, so now we're turning our attention to the strategic plan. And it really is about identifying the pillars, the basic pillars of what we want Ashland to be in the future. And then coming back from that, what are the steps we need to take? So if a particular thing is important to us, what are the resources we need to line up? And part of that is helping the council and also the larger community, because this will be a community-wide strategic plan. It's not just going to be what the city of Ashland can do. But developing that plan with the residents, with our community partners, and then being able to bring resources to bear so that when the council has decisions to make between different services or different things that the community wants, we'll be able to tier it to a roadmap as opposed to just taking our best guess, if you will. We also will line up our committees and commissions and then be working with our community partners to implement whatever is in the strategic plan.
And diversity, equity, and inclusion is a really high priority for you.
Yes, it is a high priority for me. And I have seen it continue to be a high priority for this community. And so we'll need to look and see where does it fit. Up to this point, we've seen it as a cross-cutting issue, and we've tried to look at the different decisions that we're making through that lens. And so that's part of the strategic planning process is going to figure out, is going to be to help us figure out how do we approach that in light of these bigger priorities.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of this segment. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you so much for having me.